I am Jeremy Dean QC. I have been practicing as a criminal defense barrister since 1983. This series of podcasts spotlights the criminal justice process, a cornerstone of our free and democratic society. I will also be looking at the effects of coronavirus upon the criminal justice system. I will be speaking to prisoners, prisoners' relatives, campaigners, lawyers, and others. Together, we will take a global look at the criminal justice process under the scourge of coronavirus and generally. This is Criminal Justice on Trial. Delighted to be welcomed by Director of Campaigns at the Howard League for Penal Reform, Andrew Nielsen. Andrew, thank you very much indeed for giving up your time to speak to me.
No worries. Very happy to talk about this. It's a very burning subject at the moment.
Thank you. I mean, the Howard League is incredibly well known, but would you just sort of summarise for us in outline what the objectives of the Howard League are?
Well, the Howard League is a charity that works for less crime, safer communities, fewer people in prison, because we believe it is possible to have all three of those things. And we are very old. We've been in operation for over 150 years. We're probably the oldest penal reform organisation in the world. And over that long period, we've campaigned on prison conditions, the size of the prison population. We've been involved in things like the abolition of capital punishment. So we have a long history of expertise in criminal justice and understanding what is an effective criminal justice system.
Some extraordinarily laudable aims there. And I think the public, you know, are well acquainted with the fantastic work the Howard League do. Before we come on to the reality of what's going on today, can I just ask you a bit about prison generally? So if we just factor out COVID-19 for a moment, I mean, we have a huge prison population in this country. Why do you think that is?
Well, our prison population has indeed almost doubled over the last 2.5 decades. And I think that is a sign of successive governments initiating tough on crime policies, lengthening sentences, increasing the offences that you can get a prison sentence for. And while I would say over the last 10 years, the increase in the prison population has levelled off. So really the big increases took place between the mid-1990s and throughout the noughties. You know, although the increase has levelled off to a degree over the last 10 years, it has remained high. So we have got currently about 83,000 people in prisons as of yesterday. We have a very overcrowded prison system. So many prisoners are sharing cells with somebody else, or in certain prisons, you'll find three prisoners sharing a cell designed for two. And the system as a whole has been in something of a crisis. It's a cliche to say prisons are in crisis, but we have seen for a very long time now record levels of violence, record levels of prisoners self-harming, and very concerning situation. This even before we look at something like COVID-19 hitting the prison system.
We've got approximately 83,000 people in prison at the moment. If I was to ask you what proportion of that number you feel should be in prison, are you able to give us an approximate figure?
Well, I mean, I would say that this country is no more crime infested or no more criminally inclined than the country was in the 1990s, when the prison population was closer to 40,000. Now, factoring in the fact that obviously we have increased our population since then, I still think that would suggest a prison population considerably smaller than the one that we have, probably closer to 50,000.
Yeah.
So I think it is perfectly possible to have very, you know, really a quite dramatic reduction in prison numbers. There are many people who haven't committed serious or violent crimes behind bars. There are many people who are on very long sentences where they may well have posed a danger to the public at some point, but they are now simply rotting behind bars because that's what the sentence says. So yes, I think there is ample scope for a lower prison population, but this is becoming a much more acute issue because of what's happening right now in prisons with this infection.
Of course it is, and I want to come on to the present day in just a moment, but you've used a term there that is, you know, pretty powerful. You've said that, you know, there are many thousands of people rotting in prison. Now, I just want to ask you about the public perception, because, you know, there are many members of the public who feel that prison is a holiday camp. On the other hand, prison is often defended on the basis that prisoners are offered courses and means of rehabilitation. I mean, cutting through all of it, I mean, is prison a holiday camp? Is it rehabilitative? What is your view on the global implications of imprisonment?
Yeah, I mean, prisons are far from holiday camps. I haven't encountered a Butlins or a Centre Park where people visiting are regularly cutting themselves or trying to hang themselves, which is a daily reality in prison. The only possible way I could see somebody fairly describing a prison as a holiday camp is that there is a kind of enforced idleness about prison. People are locked in their cells for the vast majority of the day, and that comes back to this issue around overcrowding. Very few prisoners actually get access to the sorts of courses that might help them in their sentence. And indeed, many of the courses available in prison are founded on pretty shaky ground in terms of the evidence that they actually work. So what we find is that generally, for most people who go to prison, it is actually something which makes people worse, not better. It's far more likely, say you've gone to prison, you've got mental health issues or drug and alcohol problems. You know, these are often the reasons why people commit crime.
Yeah, yeah.
These are things that don't get, you know, prisons aren't hospitals. They're not treatment centres. People just get worse in prison. They're more exposed to drugs and alcohol. They're exposed to violence. Mental health gets worse because of the distress of the situation, being separated from family, locked up. If the purpose of prison is to cut crime, it is not cutting crime.
And can I just, I mean, speaking from the point of view of a barrister and someone who has visited prisons many, many times over the years, I have my own views on prison officers and prison staff, and I recognise that on the whole everybody does their best, but I want to ask for your perspective on this. I mean, again, I know it's not always advisable to generalise, but insofar as you can, I mean, are prison officers qualified to deal constructively with the vast conglomeration of difficulties, mental, physical, that prisoners have inside these days?
No, prison officers are not qualified to deal with those issues. I mean, fortunately, there are some very fine individuals working in the system who almost teach themselves how to be a kind of combination of social worker, nurse, police officer, but they're not doing it on a qualified basis. Prison officer training is a matter of weeks in this country. Compare that to somewhere like Norway, where there is a degree course to be a prison officer, and it takes several years to get trained up.
So just to home in on that. So are you saying that training for a prison officer in the UK is a week?
No, a matter of weeks.
Sorry, a matter of weeks.
A matter of weeks.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of that training is around security issues, how to restrain people. You know, it's not about dealing actually with those issues. Because, prisons aren't in the end hospitals.
No.
They're not, you know.
So there's no, I mean, that prison, to be clear, prison officers are not trained in psychology or psychiatry or counselling or anything like that. Is that right?
That's right. So some of them, as I say, learn some of the skills of a counsellor on the job. The better prison officers will describe their job in a way that actually you'd think, well, in a sense, they've learned the lessons of counselling training by just dealing with people. But the vast majority of prison officers are not in that situation. And indeed, it's important to say one of the big problems in prisons over the last few years have been shortages of staff. Because of cuts to staffing some years ago now when austerity measures were hit. And the government's still struggling with this, so there are not enough staff to deal with the prisoners. And so for many prison officers, the reality of the job is simply being a turnkey.
Yeah.
And that's a problem both for the staff and for the prisoners.
I mean, you've described it, you know, with great skill, and the picture is vivid. Can I just moving things on, you know, in the direction of the scourge of coronavirus, I just want to bring in a guy called Alan, who has described to us his recent experience in a London jail, and I'll come back to certain of the specifics shortly. But just linking in what you've been saying about prison officers, I mean, he has asthma. He was placed in an underground cell for apparently no good reason, where it was difficult to breathe, and essentially was telling us that when he tried to raise this repeatedly with prison officers, initially he said they laughed in his face. But when he clarified that, he said that essentially they smiled or smirked and said, you know, bad luck, there's nothing we can do. I mean, is that an experience you recognise from your own research and knowledge of prison life?
Yes, I mean, certainly we hear all the time, we have a legal service that represents young people in custody, and we hear often of that kind of treatment by staff. As I say, I don't want to generalise, there are good prison staff out there, but there are also people who have perhaps not got the best interests of the people under their care at heart. And so, yes, we do hear about that sort of thing. And there, you know, I think there's a point about prison, which, I mean, we, the government and the courts and ourselves as an organisation would say that being sent to prison is the punishment. It's the deprivation of your liberty.
Yeah.
But there is this idea, which is abroad publicly, but I think also within some people working in the system, that you are there to be punished, and that somehow something else must be done other than having your liberty taken away. And I think that's often behind some of the staff attitudes that we hear about.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very clear analysis, and I obviously it becomes particularly pertinent at this time. And it's my understanding that the Howard League for Penal Reform are calling for the early release of prisoners, in particular the elderly, the sick, the vulnerable. Can you confirm that?
Yes, I mean, we have written to the Secretary of State for Justice, the Lord Chancellor, Robert Buckland, and we have set out a range of measures, both some incremental measures and then some more radical, to reduce the prison population at this time. And the reason for that is because we have a very small window of opportunity to do something before the disease is rampant in prisons. And that will be a very serious situation. Now, I can run through some statistics, which are not totally up to date, because obviously the situation is changing all the time, but it gives you a sense of why we're concerned. So as of yesterday, 27 prisoners in England and Wales across 14 prisons had been tested positive with COVID-19. At least 7 of those cases were in Wandsworth Prison, and that suggests that the situation in prison is mirroring the situation in the wider community, because we know that London is ahead of the curve of the rest of the country. At least 5 prison staff have tested positive, and another 4 prison escort staff, the staff that take prisoners from prisons to courts, have been tested positive. And this is really where the urgency of the situation starts to become apparent. Now, this figure is not up to date because it only goes back to Wednesday, but as of Wednesday of last week, 6,644 prison staff were absent for COVID-19 related reasons, because as we know, if somebody is in touch with somebody who has had the infection, then they have to self-isolate. Now, that is almost 20% of the prison workforce. And this was a prison workforce that already had issues of shortages before this crisis. And by now, it must be a considerably higher proportion of the prison staff group that are not actually at work. So it is a very dangerous situation. Prisons are full of vulnerable people, including, as you say, elderly prisoners who are at particular risk. And our understanding is that about 18,000 people, so one in five of the prison population, would be shielded if they were in the community.
Obviously, what you've described to us, Andrew, is incredibly worrying, and it seems that prison is a sort of microcosm of the world as a whole. I mean, are you aware of what efforts, if any, are being made to contain the spread of coronavirus in prison?
Well, this is the good question. So we're not aware of much, really. I mean, the prisons have been put into a form of lockdown, but that doesn't seem to be stopping the spread, because prisons are not like the wider community. They are what in public health terms we might call congregate settings, and again, the public health term about congregate settings, which is important here, is that they are what they call epidemiological pumps. In other words, they drive the spread of disease out into the wider community. And indeed, when you think about it, where have we seen explosive outbreaks of coronavirus? They have been in congregate settings, such as, for example, the cluster of ski chalets in Europe, which apparently seems possibly to have been where the disease has come from in terms of spreading into the UK. The first cases that were publicised were people who had been in these ski chalets. Well, prisons are congregate settings at times 20, times 100.
Yeah.
And you can't really lock down a prison in the way that, that is happening in the community. People have to be fed. There has to be some movement of staff and prisoners in order for people to actually have their needs met.
And are you aware, sorry to interrupt you, but are you aware, we obviously are subject, quite rightly and reassuringly, almost by the minute, to advice and instructions as to precautions we need to take, sanitization, washing our hands, social distancing, and so on. I mean, from what Alan, who has just been released from a London jail, has been telling us, no such opportunities are available to prisoners. It sounds like you know, they are living on a different planet. Is that your understanding of the position?
Absolutely. I mean, prisons are already massively insanitary, particularly the old Victorian jails like Wormwood Scrubs or indeed Wandsworth. They are insanitary. Soap is pretty hard to come by. You know, hot water is in some prisons is an issue, access to actual hot water, including a prison like Littlehay, which is full of elderly prisoners, but has a well-documented problem with its heating and its hot water.
And I gather that's one of the prisons where there's no movement at the moment at all. Prison, are you aware of that? There's no movement in and out of Littlehay, or indeed, I think, Birmingham prison as things stand.
With Littlehay, I think they are effectively trying to shield the population of that prison, because, as I say, it's mainly elderly prisoners. And there are other prisons, where indeed there are restrictions on movement and stopping people from coming in. But as I say, when you have staff who have to come into their place of work to do their work, and those staff have not got the sorts of protective equipment that we're hearing about that NHS workers require. There are steps being taken to try and get that equipment, but you know, this is happening at a glacial pace, and I think that it comes back to this point that actually what we need to be doing is seeing the government reduce the prison population to allow the sorts of social distancing measures that we would see in the community it's too late.
Yeah, I want to ask you a bit more about early release and related issues, but just finally, in relation to the situation in prison and coronavirus, I mean, you could not have, illustrated more powerfully the problems. I mean, it does sound like that the prison system just cannot cope or deal with or address the scourge of coronavirus. I mean, that seems like it's the reality of the situation. I mean, is that the extent of the problem, Andrew?
Unfortunately, I believe it is. I mean, I go back to that stat about the prison staff who are self-isolating, that one in five, you know, 20% of the prison workforce on Wednesday were self-isolating and unable to come to work. Now, that was a few days ago. It will have almost certainly the proportion will have risen considerably. Now, you start to get to the point where there are not enough staff to do very basic things like feed people. And the deaths that may take place in prison will not simply be directly from coronavirus, but it will be because people starve, people in great mental distress take their lives. It is a very, very serious situation. And the window of opportunity before the virus takes such hold that it would actually be irresponsible to release people with the virus into the community is a small one. And that's why the government has to take action over the course of the next week.
Have they responded? I mean, to you or generally to...
We've had reassurances that the situation is being monitored, but we haven't had any assurances of actual action. And that is something that we are pressing again with ministers over the course of this weekend and into next week. And if we don't see the sort of action that we think is necessary, then we'll have to consider what we can do as an organisation to put more pressure on the government in this.
And when you say see what you can do, I mean... Are there options available? If by, let's say, sometime next week, no action is being taken and the problem exacerbates in the way you've already described, what options are available to you or anyone to try and, you know, sift out of prison so many thousands of vulnerable people who arguably shouldn't even be there? What can be done?
Well, we are considering our position on that and what we might do. I can't preempt anything that the Howard League might do. And, right. And as I say, there is only a window of opportunity here before it becomes too difficult.
Right.
And we're very aware of that. And there is also, of course, practical issues that we recognise the government faces, which is that you can't just release people who've got nowhere to go onto the streets. Now, that's not the case for many prisoners. Many prisoners have families that they can go to. There are options out there, but there are people who may not pose any threat to anyone, but simply would be released to a position where they're effectively homeless. Now, there are measures being taken in the world of homelessness to house rough sleepers at these times to allow them to self-isolate. But we recognise, you know, there are practical issues. But nonetheless, if the government doesn't move quickly here, it will become an untenable situation. And we really do fear what may happen in prison.
Do you have any sense of what the public response would be if thousands of people were let out of prison?
Well, I think the government's fear is that it would be an unpopular move. But I think that we are in extraordinary times. And I think that the public are more braced for extraordinary measures than they would normally be. We are seeing an extraordinary effort across our communities to try and stop the infection spreading. And I think if it was proper, I mean, again, one of the reasons why I'm very worried the government is sitting on its hands here is it should be on the front foot making a convincing case for why it may be necessary, as I think it is, for some of the prison population to be released. Because the public need to understand why that's happening. That in fact, if it doesn't happen, not only will prisons become infested and with this disease and many people will die, but they will act as pumps for the infection out into the community. And there are other countries recognising this and already taking action. And I think that's another reason why the government can point to what other countries are doing. Ireland has been releasing prisoners determined suitable for early release. France has reduced the use of short prison sentences. It's just about to release, I think, some 5,000 prisoners. Iran hardly a regime.
10,000.
Iran is hardly thought of as a soft on crime regime, but it has had a massive prisoner amnesty. And even in the United States, we've got President Trump urging measures to free, in particular, elderly prisoners.
Can I just, before we wrap up, take up one or two issues finally? I mean, I suppose it's not going to be easy if the government do implement a policy of early release. It's not going to be easy to calculate criteria which are fair to all prisoners as to who should be released and who isn't. That's not an easy exercise. Would you agree?
No, it's not. I mean, I think there are some broad categories of prisoner that they could be looking at to start with. So, I mean, short sentence prisoners sentenced to a year or less, for example, would be and to stop the entry of new short sentence prisoners. So to effectively enact policies that were being considered by the Ministry of Justice under David Gough when he was the Secretary of State. Enacting those measures now and then, as I say, allowing the release of those prisoners on short sentences would immediately dramatically reduce the churn of people that go in and out of prison, because there are a lot of people on very short prison sentences, and they are the people who are most likely to catch the infection in prison and then spread it in the community. So that's a clear group of prisoners where we could see something. I think some form of amnesty for prisoners over a certain age would again be sensible. I think looking at children, prison is no place for a child at the best of times. It's certainly no place for a child
And of course, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think about a third of the prison population is unconvicted. So there's a further issue relating to much more widespread grant of bail.
Absolutely. So remand is a particular concern of ours. And one of the things that we initially really pressed upon ministers was the need for consideration of those prisoners, for the courts to be thinking about whether it is necessary to remand people. I mean, that should always be the case. But I think it is that the phrase that we've used is anxious scrutiny needs to be applied. Yeah. For people on remand, it's a very distressing time. But to be the idea of being remanded into a prison where it's insanitary, and you're going to be in contact with people who might have COVID-19, that is just not a good situation to be in. There are also, can I say, prisoners in open conditions who could also. These are prisoners in open conditions because they're near the end of their sentence, and they're considered safe enough to be in the community during the day. These are people where I think it could easily be affected that they are simply released. I had a very distressing communication from somebody on day release only yesterday, whose son is being looked after by their elderly parents, and they, when they're on day release, stay with their son and their elderly parents. They are now being asked to return to the prison. And that means that the chances are they may not see their son or their parents for some time, because they will almost certainly know somebody when they go back to prison who has the infection if they don't get it themselves, and then they will not be able to go and see their parents for all the reasons that we are not able to go and see our elderly relatives in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a very important point. Can I just conclude by just sort of introducing this theme and asking you about it? I mean, we heard from Alan, who was in a London jail, how over the last couple of weeks, for no disciplinary reason, he was in a cell without windows where the central heating was on, and, you know, he was suffering very badly. I mean, that's an incredibly powerful picture. Factoring in sort of coronavirus generally, I mean, you know, whether prisoners are isolated in prison or not isolated in prison, you know, what are the implications on the mental health of people incarcerated in our prisons under threat of COVID-19? You know, in the chaotic context you've described, what are the possible implications for the long-term mental health of our massive prison population?
Well, the implications are severe. And I mean, they were pretty severe before this infection took hold, but they're even more now. Already, you know, many prisoners were locked in their cells for the vast majority of the day. The reality now is that they will spend longer stretches again in a cell. And it is not the same as, you know, we're all staying at home in the wider community. That is quite a different thing than staying in a cell, which is basically the size of a toilet. More or less,
with a
toilet in it, an open toilet by the foot of the bunk bed. So, you know, we're talking about imagine for all the people who are listening, you know, who are having to stay at home, whether they're in flats or houses. Imagine if you were doing exactly the same thing, but you couldn't leave your bathroom.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah.
you know, you, well, for weeks.
Yeah. I mean, that, if I may say so, is as, you know, crystal clear as it could be. And you say not leave your bathroom, but a pretty filthy bathroom, I would have thought.
You might have a stranger sharing it with you.
Yeah. I'm going to have to wrap it up in just one moment, although I have to say that it would be, you know, fantastic to speak to you for a much more time. Before I do, just in a sentence or two maximum, what is your message to the government?
Our message to the government is that it must reduce the prison population to allow what is already hard hit by COVID-19 to be able to cope and to be able to ensure that very basic things happen in what is going to be an infested prison system. And those basic things are simple things like feeding people, because if we do not see pressure dramatically eased on the prison system at this time, there are going to be, we fear, many deaths, not simply from COVID-19, but from the associated measures that are put in place to try and keep people in prison when, as I say, the reality is we need to try and release them before the disease takes real hold in the prisons.
All right. Well, again, that's a very powerful message. So I'd like to thank you profusely for giving up your time and for explaining the position so clearly and for describing the scenario so powerfully, and to, you know, commend you for the fantastic work the Howard League do. And it simply remains for me to wish you the very best of luck in everything you're doing.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you for listening. Join me again next time for another episode of Criminal Justice on Trial. Please don't forget to subscribe. And if you like what you heard, give us a good review. And if you have a story to tell, get in touch. Tweet us at justice_ontrial.